Our reading this morning is from the collection of Psalms, and I'll be reading Psalm 105. Give thanks to the Lord, call on God's name, make known his deeds among the peoples. Sing to him, sing praises to him, tell of all God's wonderful works. Glory in God's holy name. Let the hearts of those who seek the Lord rejoice. Seek the Lord and his strength, seek his presence continually. Remember the wonderful works God has done, his miracles and the judgments he uttered. O offspring of his servant Abraham, children of Jacob, his chosen ones, he is the Lord our God. His judgments are in all the earth. He is mindful of his covenant forever, of the word that he commanded for 1,000 generations, the covenant that he made with Abraham, his sworn promise to Isaac, which he confirmed to Jacob as a statute, to Israel as an everlasting covenant, saying, to you I will give the land of Canaan as your portion for an inheritance. Praise the Lord.
I was gone on vacation a few weeks ago, which I do periodically. And when either myself or Matt, when we take vacations, we do our best to coordinate with each other and our lives. But as it turned out, when I was gone a few weeks ago, Matt found himself in a few tight spots. So some of us know and some of us don't know that Matt's wife, Sarah, is a family physician who delivers babies. And the weekend I was gone, she was on call. And that might not have been so bad, but their 4-year-old daughter, Eleanor, came down with some kind of virus, and that might not have been so bad, but that virus involved hours of projectile vomiting, and we all know that's bad. Very bad. Yes. But even then, you know, you expect that with your kids, and that might not have been so bad. Except that Matt comes up here early on Sunday mornings, both of us do, to get things done, and our copier refused to communicate with his laptop. And a job that should have taken 1 minute took 40 minutes. So, you know, that might not have been so bad. As I say, except I was away. So I couldn't help. There was no relief. There was no go-to person. Sarah was gone. Linda was gone. Sophia was gone. You know? So I just want you to hold that, because that's the framework. Just hold that. Once a month, Matt and I have coffee with folks. Some of you have come. And if you text in church, you see that number on our bulletin, you get invited into a loop of communication back and forth in which we invite you to meet us at a small, you know, we're down at Old Soul Coffee, and it's smaller and it's more intimate, and we can sit and talk with you, and you can ask us questions, and we can tell the story of our church, and it's just easier than on a Sunday morning. So we did that this last week, and I want everyone to know, and the podcast, that I have received permission to share this story. So we met the greatest couple, and they were so fun and bright, and they were interested in our church, and we sat down, and we started sharing stories, you know, sipping our tea and coffee and wine, and we learned a little bit about them, and they learned a little bit about us, and it'd been about 40 minutes, and ever so gently, very, very kindly, one of them said to Matt, "So, how's your baby?" And he looks at me, and I look at him. And he goes, "I have a 4-year-old. We don't have a baby." And she said, "Oh, but no, you said your wife was delivering the baby at our first Sunday of church." Matt looked totally blank. But I had listened to the podcast because I wasn't here. And I thought, oh, I know exactly what she's talking about. Because he went off script, which doesn't happen very often. But he went off script because it had been, as I said, the framework, right? And he was up here preaching, and the whole screen went back black on him while he was leading worship. And so I had heard the podcast where he said, the screen is black. That's exactly what is happening this weekend. And I said to him, you said your daughter was sick and your wife was delivering a baby. And he had actually said that. And he had also gone on to say, that's what happens. Don't ever preach about God as being a trickster. Because if you do that, this is what happens to you, right? So we sat there, and I looked at the woman, and I said, wow, you must have thought Matt was sucked as a husband. And she's like, yeah. She was gentle, but she was honest. And then I thought about it, because you can't be too gleeful in your ministry partner's, you know, pain. And I said, well, because then my mind starts racing. Well, if Sarah had a baby, then we would have known that. And then I would have been a horrible co-pastor to plan my vacation on her delivery date, right? Exactly. How can we take Sophia? Because we're going to be the go-to people if that day ever happens. So, you know, horrid. So I said, you must have thought I also was a terrible ministry partner. And they go, well, yeah.
They said they wanted to come back next week just to see what happened.
Just to see. They did. I forgot that part. They did. And they did come back, and I was there, but we didn't know any of that. And I did. It's funny because she had said, there she is. And they were talking about Sarah. Like, wow, she looks pretty good for just having a baby. Woo, there we go. CrossFit isn't even that good. So, words matter, huh? Words really matter. And there's some people sitting in here for the very first time. So we're going to be a lot more careful about saying, Sarah delivered. Actually, someone came in and I said to her, yes, because she's 39 weeks pregnant. And I said, Sarah Marshall's here just in case. Don't worry. Don't worry. Words matter. And sometimes even when you're pastors who are really experienced storytellers and preachers, you learn anew that there is always room for us to practice. And there's room to live deeply into the embarrassment of getting it wrong. Not quite pulling off what you think you are pulling off despite your absolute best intention. Right? Your best intention. So this morning, we're in the second week of trying to work on this, of this four-week series called Talking Ourselves into Being Christians. And we hope that this series is going to help us to talk about following Jesus in our everyday lives. Our series is based on a book called Testimony, Talking Ourselves into Being Christian by a great preacher named Thomas Long. He's a professor of theology and preaching at Candler School of Theology. And it's our hope that at the end of 4 weeks, that we might feel more confident in using words to tell people about the hope that we have as followers of Jesus, who root our lives in grace and grow in faith, and out of that find creative ways to reach and love. And last week, Matt paved the way by talking about faith, and if you missed that, it's on the podcast. And this morning, we're going to take some time to reflect on how we might wake up. That's why we sang that song. Wake up each morning in a way that might empower and inspire us to talk about the joy that God is creating in the world. Next week, if you also are curious and want to come back, we will reflect on what it means to talk about faith as we go about our work days, our daytime hours. And then we're going to close on August 10th by reflecting on how we might shape our evening time. Our bedtime prayers, you know, grace at the table, in order to create safe kinds of places that are in our homes, in our relationships, to sustain that kind of talking ourselves into being Christian. Because we believe that if everyone in the world, like already, were followers of Jesus, that we would still need to find ways to talk about God in the same way musicians need to find ways to talk to each other about music and knitters have to talk to each other about yarn. It's how we tell our story communicates who and whose we are And you know, this begins for us every morning of our life. Thomas Long says it this way: every fresh day announces the chance for a new beginning, the hope of an unspoiled start, the possibility that new and stronger walls can be built on yesterday's foundation, that old wrongs can be set right, and that unexpected winds and fresh surprises might blow through the day. We're standing right now with one foot in the middle of history, one foot in our lives, where yesterday's realities are still there. They're still waiting to be faced. But our other foot, in essence, is still in the Garden of Eden on the very first day of creation, full of fresh possibility. I wanted to find a way, but I couldn't do it, to press a sound effect button right now and have that guy, Robin Williams, yell, "Good morning, Vietnam." I know it's a heavy movie, but every morning, that whole movie talks about, it's morning, what's going to happen today? It seems fair to say, as we greet each time of the morning, that we already know, because we've been alive for a while, that most of our time is spent in one of two ways. In our regular or work life, right? We get up in the morning and we ask ourselves, what do I have to do today? It's a question about obligation. What schedule must I meet? What duties must I complete? And if you, I'm going to talk about you again. If you are a person who really is ordered in their life, you have a to-do list, right? A brilliant to-do list. And it's organized. It has everything you're going to do every day. And it has a section for your future plus my future and yours too, probably. Right? It's beautiful. So guess what? When your computer crashes, you lose your to-do list. Yeah, I know. I found out. But there were 3 days when Matt lost his to-do list. And it was the most wonderful moment. Because you were just so sweet. You were really sweet, though, because we left coffee with the pastors, and as we do, we go, we walk each other to our car, and like, okay, so what's for tomorrow? And he goes, I don't have my to-do list. I don't have my to-do list. But you know what? That gives you freedom on some level. When do we not have a to-do list is that other time? Vacation, hopefully. Come on, you guys. I hope you don't script all of your vacation. So that's the second time. It's not obligation, but when we're on vacation, when we vacate, the question becomes, what would I like to do? And it can be confusing, like for Matt, because he wasn't on vacation. And if we know what we're obligated to do, and we know what that framework is, and we're not on vacation, we ask these questions. And all day, often, we go back and forth, back and forth. What do I have to do? What am I obligated to do? Well, there are times when maybe there's a third way. And I want to present that this morning. And this might be helpful. It's a question for people of faith, or anyone, which helps with the obligation and with what we get to do, the pleasure. And it's this: what can I do today that would be joyful? Whether we're in our work day, our regular life, or our vacation, what can I do today that would be joyful? Beyond burden, beyond pleasure, what would bring me deep joy? What would it be like for us to start every day like that? Now, some of you are going to say that your life would become a Disney movie, and you can hear it already, right? Whistle while you work, la 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 la. You know that one? Zippity doo da, zippity hey. And they just go, my oh my, what a wonderful day. And we're like, yeah, no. But that's Disney. And they'll say, rose-colored glasses, Linda, that's not how it is. But it really, it's not just a question from a Disney movie. It's a serious question for us. What can I do today that would be joyful? I'm going to read from Thomas Long one more time. Joy is not to be equated with either that obligation I talked about or pleasure. Yet joy has very much to do with both of those things. Joy stands between obligation and pleasure, between duty and delight, and mediates between them. So to find the place of joy is to stand at the spot where obligation and pleasure meet. And the place of joy is where those things that delight us and give us pleasure, the things we freely choose, what would you like to do today? And the commitments we have made and the burdens we have agreed to carry, what do you have to do today? Intimately become one and the same. And I want to venture back to that story that I opened with, because we laughed about it and it truly happened and it was a mess up. But at the same time, part of what you heard there was this. We are doing our best. Sarah loves to be a physician and deliver babies, so she does that. Matt loves to be a pastor, and he wakes up each morning excited about that. And it's time sometimes for me to rest and recover. And so all of us do our best to put those things together because we deeply want to find the joy that is in our lives. It's not easy all the time, but it did keep, I think, the three of us from ragging on each other, because we also want to really support each other to do what brings us and God joy. Joy meets pleasure and commitment head on and says, what parts of both? At the end of the day, your joy and your commitment, your obligation and your pleasure will enable you and the people around you to be more fully human. So it's ironic, really, that often what brings us joy may actually help us forget about who we are for a little bit of time. When we engage in actions that are the most life-giving, we often end up forgetting all about ourselves because we get so swept up in the moment. Has that ever happened to you? You can't believe your whole shift just went by because you're deeply engaged in what you're doing. Thomas Merton says it this way, in an age where there is much talk about being yourself, he said, I reserve to myself the right to forget about being myself. Since in any case, there is very little chance of me being anybody else. I know. It's really obvious in many of the lives that are represented here in this room, all around you right now. We are counselors. We are parents. We are physicians. We are nurses. We are musicians. We are attorneys. We are students. We are social workers who help children and families. We are nurses that work for public agencies. We are city planners that help our cities have life together. We watch over not only ourselves and our families, but many, many people in love in all of the places that we go. But what may be a challenge, even though that is our truth, is that we don't know how to talk in those places about anything that goes on in here or anything that would involve faith language. Because as we seek to follow Jesus and to be people of the way, it would be helpful to understand that what gives us the deepest joy and what makes us most fully human and what frees us to be people who are grateful as we go about our day, starting first thing in the morning, is to look for places in the world where God is at work and to join in the activity of God when we see it. And whether that be in the courtroom or the boardroom or the exam room or the practice room or the classroom or the construction site or the farmland, wherever that might be, we need to find the language to bring our joy into those places. The Gospel of John, John 9:4 says it this way. Jesus is talking to his disciples. We must work the works of God who sent me while it is day, while we go about our day. So what if you started each morning with this as your prayer? God, what are you going to do out there in the world today and how can I be part of it? What if we just woke up and said that to ourselves in our own minds or out loud, or wrote it on a note on our phone and looked at it when we got up in the morning. Now, it may not feel like a prayer, but we do well to remember that prayer is simply a conversation with God. It's a back and forth. And we begin the day in prayer, and God speaks to us, and we engage in God's creation all throughout the day. When the world sees us living like that, the world sees people at peace. We imitate God by speaking to others as we seek to be part of God's creation. And in this way, our prayer and our speech moves in two directions. First, to pray is to engage in a talk with God. And second, we are witnessing and testifying to our faith. And I'm putting religious language to it. There's a woman named Dorothy Day who founded the Catholic Worker Movement, which cared for the poor people of urban Chicago and well beyond that, and often cited an experience very early in her life that led her into becoming a Christian. As a little girl, she lived in Chicago, and she went looking for her friend, her playmate, who lived next door in the apartment. And she went there, and she found the door open, and she went in. And when she did, she found her friend's mom on her knees, Mrs. Barrett, she called her. She was on her knees praying. And that surprised Dorothy. So she saw that happening. And as soon as Mrs. Barrett heard her daughter's playmate, Dorothy, she stopped praying and turned and said, she went to the store. She'll be back soon. And then she just turned around and kept on praying. Years later, Dorothy Day remembered and wrote down and said, I felt a burst of love towards Mrs. Barrett that I have never forgotten. And she credits that encounter as one of the earliest moments that she felt God and God's transcendence. Imagine a little girl just seeing someone praying on their knees in their home. This sense, she said, was there was more to life. And that, little by little, developed in her to become an irresistible call from God. Well, clearly Mrs. Barrett was having a fairly traditional conversation with God, on your knees, with your hands clasped, saying your morning prayers, right? What happens when our way, our speech, or our posture, our expression of faith that seeks to reach in love to others doesn't look quite so traditional? What if it doesn't seem to resemble like praying at all? What if it doesn't even seem religious? Because a lot of people have a box about what it has to be. In the morning, we wake up our children. I wake up my kids anyway. And I wake up my kids a lot like my mom, who's in the room, woke us up and still does if you spend the night at her house, just so you know. Honey, time to get up. It's a beautiful lyrical sound. It's morning, time to get up. Some of us have roommates, and maybe you say, you guys are at the table, and you go to get your second cup, and you just say, can I pour you some more coffee? And they say, is it any trouble? And you say, no problem. No problem. Nobody quoted the Bible. Nobody said amen. Nobody even mentioned Jesus at all. Now, some people would say that's just idle chatter. But what if it isn't? What if it's more than that? In the same way that each morning is new and God calls out to us and we wake up, are we not doing the same with whatever morning chatter we participate in? When we call out to others, when we text, good morning, mom, when we say these words, we're seeking to bridge the gap to form a peaceful, reconciled communion with others. Even if you live by yourself, there is a form of this, I think, because you start, when I'm by myself, which is rare, but you start the music in the morning, you turn on the news in the morning, there's chatter. We welcome our mornings, and voices are raised in the dawn's early light. When we use our words to join in the activity of God as the day unfolds before us, to reach and love and bear faithful witness to God, we do this in a way you won't believe it, but it makes a huge difference. Or maybe you will believe it, because words have meaning. There's this really old hymn, and it asks the question in old language, why should the wonders God hath wrought be lost in silence and forgot? The psalm that Matt read for us this morning answers that question. They shouldn't. We shouldn't forget them, and we shouldn't be silent. Rather, the people of God are called upon to make known, to remember, to tell what we know. By asserting God's sovereignty and inviting people to praise and obey God, Psalm 105 subverts every human claim to power and privilege. And in other words, the primary identity of God's people is that of servant. And the good news is that people who work on rooting their lives in grace and growing in faith and reaching in love will end up strong, muscular in our faith. By telling the story of God's wonderful works, the story of God's acting for our sake, and how all that has happened in the Bible and through Jesus, we communicate God's love and grace to others. Well, there's a really famous theologian, long dead, by the name of Paul Tillich, and he preached a sermon many, many years ago, and it was called You Are Accepted. And in this sermon, which was published in a book of sermons, he talked about God's grace and love and acceptance by all persons. And this man was an academic. And you've heard me refer to myself not as an academic. So I loved this story because this man is very academic, very well thought of. And he came to work at Yale, or he came to deliver this book to Yale. And the faculty there completely criticized it. They said that this book was not enough. And that was because Paul Tillich, the great theologian, did not use enough theology in his language. Didn't use enough religious words. That they accused him of watering down the gospel story and the theology of salvation and justification by faith. I'm already losing you, right? All of those church words. It wasn't enough, they said, to just say, you are accepted. Really? It's not enough? There are people everywhere who feel outside the boundary of God's loving embrace, and they are people who simply need to hear that they are loved and accepted. And really, God can take it from there. We can trust God. But first, it's our calling to say the first part. All means all. You're loved. You're accepted. So we want to show you a short video. It's about 3 minutes long. And this video helps us to see this in action. And what I really want to tell you is this is not a religious video, but it is a faithful video. And we just want to share it with you.
I like Team Success because when I come to the group, I feel and I know that I'm not the only one that's been through a lot being a teen mom.
I used to get really nervous being young and pregnant, but coming here, I feel a lot more comfortable because there's other young girls that are also pregnant, so I know I'm not alone.
I enjoy Team Success because it shows me that I'm not the only pregnant teenager out there.
I enjoy Team Success for the support and for the welcoming they do of like all the teen moms.
The place for me to meet new friends and be with girls that understand me and that's in the same situation.
Teen Success means a lot to me because I love coming to communicate with the ladies, and there's a lot here going for everyone.
I like Teen Success because they inspire me to do a lot of things such as go back to school and possibly work for Planned Parenthood in the future.
Success for me is a safe place to talk about my week and rant or get an in or out.
Well, I like Teen Success because you get to meet like new moms and like it's my first baby, so it's like good to meet new people.
We can just have fun and we all know about the struggles about having a kid, and it's just fun and enjoyable to be with other teen moms that you can relate to.
I like Teen Success because I can come here and be around the people that I love. We're not actual blood or family, but that's the way I feel.
I like Teen Success because it helps you release stress out whenever you have a problem.
We don't really go out and hang out with our friends, and this program gives us the opportunity to hang out with all the new mommies and, you know, talk to people that we would never imagine talking to before.
I enjoy coming because I get to talk to other mommies my age going through the same thing as me.
I like Teen Success because it's a place where I can come and I don't get treated differently because I'm a teen mother.
I love some of those quotes. I would tell a new member she is not alone and that she can make it. I'm looking forward to telling someone that I did it and I finished school. We talk to people we never imagined talking to before. These teenage moms have every reason to be silent, and we know it. They have every reason not to speak out about their experience, but instead they chose to join a group and find ways to speak in love, and they share their stories with each other. And did you hear that one young woman? I can be around people that I love. We're not actual blood or family, but that's the way I feel. It's entirely possible that those teen moms are waking up in the morning because there are diapers and wipes here, that now their mornings maybe, because we've chosen to join God's activity in the world where they're not worried about that portion. And they are a little bit freer to also join God's activity in the world. Sometimes the most faithful testimony does not sound religious. But if the words one shares communicates love that is greater than ourselves, if the words communicate acceptance one of another just as we are, then those words are the words of God. And if we're the ones sharing them, then that's us talking ourselves into being Christian. That's what it looks like. Very late in her life, Dorothy Day was interviewed and she said this: if I've achieved anything in my life, and believe me, she achieved a lot, it's just because I have not been embarrassed to talk about God. Christians are not embarrassed to talk about God. This doesn't mean we're always polished at it. This doesn't mean we always get it right. Matt and I learned a great deal from our conversation 4 nights ago. And we've been doing this for a while. Those folks at Coffee with the Pastors were willing to ask us some questions and to talk to us about God, and we accepted each other in that moment of miscommunication and clarification and total raucous laughter, believe me, in a public place that was much very unexpected direction that it took. We think we can all do this. So, We're going to try it in a different way. Just relax. I'm not going to ask you to talk to anybody right now. We're going to pray, though. We're going to pray because we think we can all do this. We just need to pray about it a little bit more and to know that we're in this together. And to just practice talking and listening, talking to God and listening for God's voice. So we need to try and shape our words just like those teen moms did. That wasn't polished. I mean, they wrote it out. But if you can really hear it, they're breathless because they're so nervous. They're so preciously nervous to say what they said. So as we move into this time of prayer, here's your invitation. We want to consider how we're going to begin each new day in the morning hour. And we're just going to invite you to either stay where you are, the prayer prompt will be on the screen, to move to a kneeling station. There's some in the windows. There's some behind Matt at the rail, or a standing station if I know it's hard and scary to come all the way up here. And there are some in the back. And we're going to invite you to just pause and to consider the question, what are you not embarrassed to say out loud about God? Ask yourself that question and then make a commitment between yourself and God to try and do it this week. And then as a reminder, we want you to take a stone with you, another one. By the end of the series, maybe you'll have 4 stone reminders. What are you not embarrassed to say out loud about God? Make a commitment about that to try this week, and then take a stone. Light a candle if you're kneeling over there. Just take some time in prayer.